Hello, beloved listeners, and welcome to another hour of Advanced Living Radio. This is Kenneth Lesser, and I'm thrilled and delighted to be your host again today. And you know, we have a commitment week in and week out, something of value, some little gem, a goodie, something that you might have thought of, you might not have, but bringing you guests that are going to essentially improve your quality of life in some level, sometimes reduce stress, sometimes help understand yourself better, sometimes, like our guest today, maybe understanding a little bit more of the world situation with a little bit of an optimistic twist to it. I'm telling you, you know, this is kind of get ready, strap yourself in. We could have some fun here today. And what guides us week in and week out is a thought, a prayer, an intention. It goes like this: Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, show me the best ways to have the most fun inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously experience vibrantly, exquisitely healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives, so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. That's the goal. That's the intention. And as we get into our show today, I want to ask you to take a moment and acknowledge our sponsor, Advanced Living Comfort. When you go to that website, kind of what's Advanced Living Comfort, you're going to discover a Clark Kent clock with superpowers. It's a small-looking digital clock you'd have on your nightstand or in your travel bag or in your desk at work. When you plug it in, it creates a harmonized energy that mitigates the stress of the electromagnetic world, and actually, as some of the doctors have tested it, have said, raises a healing field of energy, like having holy people show up and pray or meditate in your room. So check it out. Folks like Jack Canfield, Reverend Michael Beckwith, Harvard MD Eva Selhub, a number of others have come to love it over the years, and invite you to check out advancedlivingcomfort.com. All right, and now for some fun and adventures, we're wondering, well, what would it be like to have someone that is highly acknowledged for his skill and ability to help us work, not just from the present, but go into the future and do some things to reshape where we're at presently. And I know this is probably like you're going, well, what's that? That's pretty vague. Well, this is why we brought our wonderful guest on, to clarify this so that you can have some fun with a better future. And our guest today, Thomas Fry, he is a futurist, a speaker, a author, traveling all over the world and doing some amazing things. And what we want to know a little bit about him is that he pushes the envelope of understanding as part of the celebrity speaking circuit by creating fascinating images and understandings of the world to come. And this is not going to be apocalyptic type of stuff. So if that's, you know, oh my gosh, you know, that future, no. There's actually room for an amazing future. And Thomas Fry has been fortunate enough to headline events along with some of today's most recognizable figures. Tom Peters, Nobel Prize winning, Muhammad Yunus, the former CEO of General Electric, Jack Welch, former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, former President of Colombia, Andres Pastrana, Prime Minister of Spain, Felipe Gonzalez Marquez, Nobel Prize winning economist, Joseph Stiglitz, just on and on. It is so wonderful. And Thomas is the executive director and senior futurist at the Da Vinci Institute, which he founded. And he works closely with the Institute senior fellows and board of visionaries to develop original research studies which enable him to speak on unusual topics and translating trends into unique opportunities. Yeah, there's actually all this lurking goodness out there that you won't find in mainstream media. I mean, for whatever reason, mainstream media says, well, you really need more drama. We don't want you too optimistic because it's harder to control people who are very optimistic. So let's have you scared a lot. Well, Thomas is coming from the other side, that there's all these wonderful people out there in the world that are really doing some important things. And so he's someone that you'll want to tune into, and he's been featured in hundreds of articles, both national and international publications, including the New York Times, Huffington Post, Times of India, USA Today, U.S. News and World Report, The Futurist Magazine, Morning Calm, which is an in-flight magazine for Korean Airlines, Skylife, an in-flight magazine for the Turkish Airlines, Colorado Biz Magazine, Rocky Mountain News, many more. And so, let's see, whatever. Oh, my gosh, you know, a little bit more. He launched the Da Vinci Institute, and before he did that, he spent 15 years at IBM as an engineer and designer, where he received over 270 awards, which is basically more than any other IBM engineer, probably more than a bunch of them put together, I'm guessing. And he is also a past member of the 999 Society, which is for folks with a high IQs that are over 99.9 percentile. So let's welcome our fun guest today, Thomas Fry.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I didn't think that intro was ever going to end.
Oh, well, we'll have to read faster or or just condense it down. It's just nice to take a moment to really acknowledge so much of what you've been up to, and to hopefully interweave this into something that to me is the essence of what you're about, which is that we actually have reason to think about a fabulous world that can be created.
Well, there's two ways of looking at the world ahead. We can look at it as in a negative light, or we can look at it through a positive lens, understanding that every problem that gets created creates an opportunity. And so we know we're going to have problems, but that also means we're going to have a tremendous amount of opportunity ahead as well.
Ah, there you go. I love it. Now, someone would wonder, well, you're a futurist, so tell me, how much do you know about the future?
Well, I know a lot about the future, like 6 minutes ahead of me here. The farther we get out, the less we know about it. But as we study the future, thinking about the future is like a muscle that we have in our brains that doesn't get exercised very much. So somebody that's spends a lot of time thinking about the future, which I do, you tend to develop better understandings. You look at things differently. You are able to start mapping trends and looking at cycles. There's roughly 600 different cycles that have been uncovered in the world, and so just kind of following a lot of these cycles, we start understanding the world around us. We start looking at trends. We start building scenarios. We start there's a number of different tools that give us some clues as to what's going to be happening.
Mm.
And so using these assortment of tools, and we can start putting together some things for us to work with.
Wow. Okay. Well, this is really helpful. I like it. Now, what I'm just wondering, when you're thinking about some of the things that you're doing, and it's like this part about how do you realize yourself to be living the rest of your life in the future. How do you adjust perspectives, past, present, future, and how do you deal with that, being a futurist?
Well, we're a very backward-looking society. We're backward-looking because it's just human nature. We've all personally experienced the past. As we look around us, we see evidence of the past all around us. As you look at information, basically all the information you come in contact with is essentially history. So the past becomes very knowable, and yet we're going to be spending the rest of our lives in the future. So it's almost as if we're walking backwards into the future.
Ah.
And so my job as a futurist is to help turn people around, to give them some perspective of what the future holds, to help them develop some understanding of where we're headed. And then that changes the way they think about the world today.
Wow. Ah, I like that. Because sometimes people are just busy living and they're not really checking in. Where's my focus of attention? And one example that helped make the point that I think you're making, it kind of was to speed up the situation. And so imagine yourself driving down the highway at 60 miles an hour and then see how long you'd be comfortable driving 60 miles an hour looking in the rearview mirror.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. I mean, we're constantly getting blindsided by the future because we're not paying attention to all of the clues that are out there. And so my job is to work with companies, to work with businesses, to avoid this blindsided syndrome that's a lot of it's going on around us.
Mm. Mm. Okay, and then your latest work, is that the book Communicating with the Future?
Right, Communicating with the Future. See, we all make decisions today based on our understanding of what the future holds. And so I always talk about the future creates the present. Now, this idea of thinking about the future, I mean, this is just the opposite of what most people think. They think that what we're doing today is going to create the future, but from a little different perspective, it's our understanding of the future that determines our actions today. And so if we change the images in our head of what the future holds, we change the way we make our decisions today. I mean, that's a real important point.
Mm.
And so this book takes people through this journey and talks about a process that we use for actually creating visions of the future, And there's several steps for this. We go through and look at the idea of storytelling, and then build storyboards, and we build models and graphic art, and do surveys and studies and interviews and videos, and suddenly we have an entire body of work around some aspect of the future. Now, this is an iterative process, and invariably you're not going to get it right the first time. But once you create a body of work around the future, that you start influencing it. You start influencing the way the future is going to unfold. So how does the future get created? The future gets created in the minds of everybody around us. Certainly some people have more influence on it than others, but and certainly there's influence that's outside of human control. But the part that's controllable by humans, it's created in the minds of everybody around us. And so as we influence the mindset of the people around us, we influence the way the future unfolds. And so that becomes kind of this basis of communicating with the future.
Hmm. Wow. Wow. And I was noticing in the in your book a chapter that's the second step. Well, first step, build your vision, you may want to comment on. And then I love this part that for step two, create an attractor. And so
once you build this vision of the future, I mean, you create this body of work around the future, then how do you turn it into something that's actually going to influence others? You do it by a process we call publishing, which is you put it out there, and you publish stuff online, and whether it's newspaper articles or whether it's images or videos or whatever, some of these things start to gain a lot of attraction. And so once it reaches a certain point, once it gets to a certain point where, I don't know, a million people have actually seen it, you've influenced that many people, then suddenly that becomes an attractor. Society then becomes drawn to that vision, that endpoint. The vision becomes self-perpetuating then.
Hmm. Wow. Okay. That's important. People don't think about what are they anticipating.
Right. I mean, there's a huge vacuum out there. I mean, there's nobody consciously guiding us into there. There are very few people consciously guiding us into the future right now. And so so this is wide open territory, and somebody that wants to really take this on and build a movement around this, I mean, it's there, it's possible. It's
yeah.
I'm convinced that this is an unexplored tool that's with great potential.
Yeah. Wow. Just kind of standing back, thinking of different folks that have projected out their visions of the future, and thought to myself, well, not that many years ago, Benito Mussolini, Adolf Hitler, had visions of the future, and they got a whole bunch of people wrapped up in that vision, and my gosh, boy, just simply that seemed to be a bit messy.
You can always take these things and use them in the wrong way.
Yeah.
For every new technology that's out there that gets unleashed, it has the potential to be used in. I mean, even though it's created with all the right intentions, it can be used in the wrong ways. And so, this is one where we have the communication tools that we have in the internet right now give us so many more options. When we create the initial vision of the future, then we add detail to it, and our ability to add detail to it nowadays, we can add drawings and pictures, and we can do animations, we can do things that make it look like it's already happened. Then as we tell stories around it, I mean, all of this body of work that we're creating then is what turns it into the attractor then that starts pulling people towards it. And so once the vision is crafted in the right way, and again, it's an iterative process. You're invariably going to get it wrong the first time through. So you go through it over and over again until you do it right. Now, here's the trick that I talk about in the book is that communications is just a signal sent and signal received. So as you're creating this body of work around the future, you're tagging everything with keyword phrases. And then as you publish it, you put it out there online, and it goes throughout the entire world. That's the signal sent. And then you wait and listen back, and you listen to how many times these keyword phrases start getting used. And as these keyword phrases start entering into common conversation, the discussions that are happening over the water cooler, as these phrases get used again and again, at a certain point, you can tell that this is a vision that's going to become self-perpetuating. It's going to take off on a life of its own. And then you can use that vision then to plan strategies around. You can use that to plan the strategies around if you're running a business, if you're running your personal life, or however you want to look at it. But understanding that that's the way that particular vision is going to unfold in the future, then you know at what time you can make certain decisions, and you'll be correct in those decisions.
Mm. Oh, wow. So there's ways of strategizing little events that, okay, now this transpired, so now we implement this set of decisions that we had previously considered.
Right. Or we can introduce a set of products because the world is ripe for them now.
Okay.
So from a business standpoint, I mean, it can be an incredible planning tool.
Wow. Yeah. Now, this is a bit off the wall, which is one of my specialties. I actually majored in that in college. I'm just kind of curious, in families, when the kids reach teenage years, it tends to, for most families, be very chaotic.
Yeah.
And so, because I can imagine how, you know, the stuff you're talking about is very well geared to businesses, and I was just kind of curious, thinking of families as sometimes a business that needs to be run, separate from a marriage type of part of it. And just imagining a family and the kids going through different stages of their lives, especially the teenage years, and having things work out with so much better communication and teamwork as a family. I don't know if any of that's relevant to some of your work, but it's a dream of mine.
Yeah, I mean, part of this could be used to, as an example, just the simple act of watching television 10 years from now. What's it going to be like? What's it going to be like 20 years from now? Is watching television, are we still going to be looking at some appliance like we are today? Is it going to be a projected image? Is it somehow going to be projected on a wall? Will it be digital wallpaper that we're all looking at?
Mm.
Will it be flat images, or will it be three-dimensional? And will we even have what we think of as television, you know, 20 years from now? Or will something else come along and totally replace it? I mean, these are things that we don't quite understand at the moment because there's so many variables in play. Somebody could, however, create a very compelling vision around this and essentially start driving the industry. And so that drives the entertainment component of our lives. They could do it around smartphone communications, and whether smartphones are going to exist or whether we're all going to be wearing Google glasses or something even more sophisticated like smart contacts that are totally invisible to anybody outside, that you're seeing things and you have images coming, information coming into your head that nobody else is aware of. So this whole problem of people hearing voices in the past may have actually been real. So
wow, they were just ahead of their time.
Yeah.
Oh,
just that... a project at Bell Labs that got out of control.
there you go. Well, now I'm wondering, because we're living in, for most people on the planet, some very intense times where some of the economic and social inequalities are coming to be very much obvious, and then for so many people, jobs in an economic time where there's a lot of change. And I'm just wondering, as a futurist, what do you have to comment about skills that people need for jobs, some of that area?
Yeah, and that becomes a hotly debated topic. The I predicted earlier this year that by 2030 that over 2 billion jobs are going to go away between now and 2030. And these 2 billion jobs going away is not intended to be some doom or gloom scenario. It's intended to be a wake-up call. Because these jobs that go away create room for other things to get created. But we're going to have to create jobs at a faster pace than ever before in all history. And we have the some of the talent, some of the skills, but a lot of it we don't have. Kind of a general rule of thumb for futurists is that 60% of all the jobs 10 years from now haven't been invented yet. And so we're going to have to constantly be updating our skills. I have a major criticism of colleges and universities because the process is way too slow and it's way too expensive. I use this Midwestern phrase that I used to describe colleges, and that they're always shooting behind the duck. We need to anticipate where things are going. We need to look at the trends and understand what skills are going to be needed 10 years from now, 20 years from now, and start training people for those things. And then when we can't anticipate some of the needs, that we need to create systems for rapidly retraining people, to reboot people's skills in quick and an easy way. And we're doing some of that at the Da Vinci Institute right now. So as an example, we started a new division called Da Vinci Coders, and we're training people to become computer programmers. And we have it's set up as an 11-week program, so it's less than 3 months, and it's a full immersion program that's beginner-based, so you don't have to know anything about coding to go into it. And we take people down one of two tracks, either learning this hot new language, which is Ruby on Rails, or this other one, which is HTML5 JavaScript. And so in 11 weeks, you can come out and have some level of proficiency in the coding world, hopefully enough so that you can enter the job market. Now, the coding world is desperate to get more talent. There is a serious job shortage, a talent shortage there. There's job openings that are going unfilled, and these are really good-paying jobs. In Boulder, Colorado, as an example, an average Ruby on Rails programmer is making mid-80s to mid-90s in salary. If you're on the upper end of the scale, you're well into the six figures. And so this is a talent that's desperately needed. Projections are showing that by 2030, over half of all, by 2020, I should say, is half of all the job openings are going to go unfilled just simply because we have such a significant talent shortage.
Mm.
Wow. Some of the stuff that's driving it is that all the major corporations have their day-to-day operations written in very old code. It's written in languages like Fortran and COBOL, some of the very old languages.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that have been maintaining this old code are starting to retire. And as these people retire, we're not exactly having colleges pump out a lot of Fortran and COBOL programmers anymore.
No.
And so companies are looking at this and they're deciding, well, we're going to have to rewrite everything. And as they make these decisions to rewrite everything, that's going to require a lot more talent. At the same time, young people coming out of college are looking at trying to write mobile apps. The mobile app world is taking off like a rocket. Mobile apps just started 4 years ago. It was March of 2008 when Steve Jobs unveiled the software developers kit for the Apple iPhone, and it was July of that year when they opened the App Store with 552 apps, and it was within the next 3 days, those 552 apps were downloaded 60 million times.
Mm.
The world changed at that point. Now, Apple has little over 700,000 apps that are available. Android on all the Google phones, a little less than 700,000 apps you can choose from. So it's close to 1.4 million apps to choose from right now, and that number is growing rapidly. So that the app world was already a hot market, and then Instagram sold for $1 billion, and that was like the shot heard around the world. And virtually everybody has some mobile app in the back of their heads that they want to create. And so this is driving the programming world in a whole different direction. Now, as we're pulling people back and forth from one side to the other, then there's a bunch of areas of business, whether it's government agencies or nonprofits or small businesses that are needing to get other work done, and that's pulling the programming world in a third direction. And all of this combined means that we just simply don't have enough coders. And so this isn't going to go away anytime soon. We're going to need programmers for many decades to come. But it's a very fluid field, so you have to constantly update your skills as you go along.
Wow.
And so that's what makes it so exciting, and that's where one of the big opportunities is.
Yeah. Well, this is, to me, huge. And, Tom, you were making mention of this Da Vinci Institute in an 11-week program where someone could get the HTML5 and Java availability, and then this Ruby on Red, was that?
Ruby on Rails.
Rails, there we go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ruby on Rails is it's a real hot coding language. It's actually a framework that between 2010 and 2011, the demand for Ruby on Rails programmers went up 38% just in that short period of time. And it continues to just climb very rapidly. So anybody that wants to find out more about it can go to davincicoders.com. And our next class is starting a week from Monday. We still have a few seats available if anybody's interested. It's $6,000 to take this 11-week course, but it's one of those life-changing experiences.
And is this something that I'm guessing now people come to a classroom, will this be available online or home study?
There are some home study options. We've looked at several different options, but we found that when people can actually immerse themselves in it in a setting where they're surrounded by like-minded people that are also learning it, that makes it a very synergistic setting, and they can all do really well using that approach. So we don't have any online version of it. We've been asked to do some online versions, so we're not ready to go that direction just yet. Again, it's a very fluid environment. So something you teach this fall in 2012, by 2013, it will have already changed. It's like the people that write books about Facebook. As soon as it's printed, then it's already outdated. Things are changing that quickly.
Yeah. And I'm just wondering, let's say someone decides, okay, I want to learn Ruby on Rails and get immersed in the program, with things changing, is there follow-up from you, or would the people that they work for then just basically keep them updated and retrained? Or
right, there's lots of meetings, lots of options for constant retraining in the industry once you're involved in it. So, one of the things that we do is as a student in our coders class, is we assign everybody an industry mentor. And that's somebody who's an expert in the industry that is already coding in those languages. And so you're assigned a person that you can talk to on a regular basis if you get stuck on something, or just so that you can talk about the industry itself. We also bring in experts to give talks every Wednesday. We send out a newsletter once a week that tells about all the events happening in the area, so you can continue to immerse yourself in the tech community so that there are different groups like the Boulder Ruby group. There's one called Derailed in Denver. There's there's the Boulder-Denver New Tech Meetup groups. There's Boulder Open Coffee. There's Denver Open Coffee. There's all these events going on that if you start networking and start meeting people that are in the industry, you can you very much will stay aligned with all the changes that are happening along the way.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's pretty exciting. And I'm just curious. I guess two areas. One, I was thinking in terms of the baby boomers. So many people that in just the general working group that said, gosh, you know, get a job. I was told early in my life one of the best things a person could do was get a government job, civil service.
Right.
And that was a high ideal, because you figured businesses may come and go, but the government's not gonna go away. And so now here are all kinds of folks in the baby boomers that would like to retire, and their 401ks and the retirement plan disappeared, and you know, is there something for them?
Yes, it is. I mean, we have people in their mid-50s that are taking this course. And so when people, when an industry goes away, when your skills are no longer needed, when you're over 50, it is really hard finding a job.
Yeah.
It's very tough. Unless you want to work as a greeter at Walmart, there's not a lot of job openings for people over 50. Maybe that changes sometime in the future, but it doesn't look that way. So to give you an example, the average person today that turns 30 years old has had 11 different jobs.
Mm.
That's in the United States here.
Yeah.
My prediction is that within just 10 years, the average person that turns 30 years old will have worked between 200 to 300 different projects. We're becoming a much more project-based society. The communication systems on the Internet are opening up the potential for us to align the needs of a business with the talent of an individual in far more precise ways than ever before. So one thing that most people don't pay close attention to is that businesses have an obligation to hire the fewest number of people they can get away with. And it doesn't really matter who's in charge in Washington, whether it's Republicans or Democrats. The cost, the overhead costs of employment continue to rise. Right now, the overhead cost of the average employee is a little over $10,000. It's just overhead costs. And that continues to rise. So businesses have an obligation to hire the fewest number of people they can get away with. And so if they have an opportunity to somehow circumvent the hiring process to get a problem solved, to get a project taken care of without having to go through the whole HR process, that gives them an advantage. It gives them a distinct advantage.
Yeah.
And so as these we shift more to a project-based society, and this is the way the movie industry has worked for years. The movie industry, as soon as a movie project comes into play, it attracts actors and actresses and writers and directors and camera guys, lighting guys, and makeup people, and they all come together for this project. As soon as the project is over, they all disband, and they form around another project. It's very organic in nature.
Mm-hmm.
And so as they're doing this, they... we can shift that line of thinking to other industries. And so I've been predicting that this idea of doing project-based work like this, which incidentally works very closely, aligns with kind of the mindset of young people today, the Gen Y generation. They actually find security in being able to jump from job to job to job. They don't want to end up like their parents who've had a job for many years, and then as soon as the job goes away, they're devastated and they can never quite get back on track again. And so they don't want to fall into that same trap. But there's a number of these people are going to have difficulty finding one job after another after another, and so there could be a lot of gaps in between.
Mm.
So that's why I'm predicting this whole idea, what I call a business colony.
Yeah.
And a business colony is one where you'd be staffed with project managers that would bring projects in. And then inside of this colony would be the trusted people that you work with. And these relationships are all based on trust.
Mm.
And so once some new project comes into play, then you can do a piece of that work. And so some of these business colonies are going to be set up as around specific themes like nanotech colonies or IT colonies, gamer colonies, biotech colonies, different things like that. But as I've been thinking about it more and more, I actually think that we're going to have a lot of corporations that form their own colonies. Just as an experimental thing outside of the corporate walls, they'll set up a business colony, staff it with a project manager, and then they will essentially lob projects over the corporate wall into the colony to test it out, to see how things work.
Mm.
And people will scurry around and get the project done, shoot it back into the corporate setting, and then wait for the next incoming project to come in from the corporation. That seems to be a very realistic model of how things are going to start working in the future. And so as we learn more about working from home and distance working and co-working facilities and all of these variations on the theme of the ideal workplace and the office of the future and the tools of the future you're going to be using, all of these things are constantly morphing and shifting. And so that's one of the visions that we see happening.
Yeah, and perhaps I appreciate your comments. I was just thinking as you're projecting this out there, I was looking at the contrast between the mindset of a number of generations where it was like you go to school, learn some basics so that you could then go work in a business job, and the ideal was to be this loyal employee for 40 years and then to be able to retire. And, of course, that has dramatically shifted, and so it's just interesting because you're talking about this new climate, and the word loyalty doesn't appear to have the same depth of meaning when you're dealing with a lot of projects.
Yeah. Well, the relationships that you build are still going to be built on this notion of trust, and so you trust somebody's ability to get this project done, and the person doing the project is trusting this person that they will get paid for it, and they also trust that they're respected well enough so that they will get another job into the future. But if you're thinking in terms of long-term loyalty, like I'm going to have a 401k and a retirement plan and health care and all that that I can retire on, you know, that's not there. And so this idea of saying that you're an employee of Google or Microsoft or IBM or whatever it might be, that's going to be replaced by, oh, I've done projects for Microsoft, I've done projects for IBM, and I've done projects for Motorola and 150 other ones.
Yeah.
And so your credibility in the past has been based on, who all you associate with yourself. It's this, you kind of wrap yourself in the credibility of all the people that you've worked for. Now it's taking on a whole different look and feel, which gets into kind of an interesting topic about, this whole area of resumes that kind of the common tool of the job market right now. They're painting a picture of this person, getting an image of this person in such broad brushstrokes that you really have no sense as to who that person really is. I think sometime in the future we're going to get into kind of a much more granular system for assessing talent that's in people. And so the number of experiences this person has had, whether it's how many countries you've traveled to, or how many projects you've done, or how many books you've read, or movies you've gone to, or Broadway plays you've seen, or done wine tasting in California at 45 different places. I mean, those type of things are all kind of feed into who you are. And the resume process is far too crude of tool to actually give you a real clear assessment as to what this individual is all about. And
right.
So somehow we're going to be able to, in the future, we have somebody we're going to need that has this set of skills and some sort of a pattern that goes across the page, and then we need somebody that can bring those skills and it matches patterns up, and suddenly, voila, we have the candidates we need, and we can talk to them and see if they'll fit into our culture.
Oh, okay. Wow, that sounds quite fascinating.
Yeah, so that's kind of a roundabout way of looking at things. When I talk about colleges and universities morphing and shifting, a lot of times I bring up this idea of the microcredit. And thinking in terms, just in kind of general terms, of 100 credits equal, 100 microcredits equal a full credit in college.
Okay.
And what if you could go to a movie and get 2.4 microcredits just by answering some questions afterwards to show that you've actually learned something? And how many Hollywood producers would actually pay big money to have that feature added to their movie so that every teenager out there would say, hey, Mom, I need to go to the movies because that's part of my assignment. I need to get more credits here.
Wow. Wow. So, yeah, the entertainment industry people would just be salivating heavily, I would think, to have a vehicle that had people more engaged in what was going on.
Yeah, it would legitimize than people. I mean, these people are actually getting microcredits for being part of the common culture. And whether it's playing a video game or whether it's reading a book or a magazine or watching TV shows or doing some other experience, at the end of it, then you answer a few questions and suddenly you have microcredits that you can add to this whole transcript that you're creating. And that that entire transcript becomes multidimensional in ways that we have no way of envisioning anymore.
Yeah, well, that's very fascinating because a person with a diverse background and a variety of off-job interactions tends to definitely have some things going for them that a person that just didn't do much socially or participate in some of these other areas. So,
in the past,
fascinating.
Yeah, in the past, an employer would actually view somebody that jumped from job to job to job quite negatively. In the future, I think it's going to be the norm, and I think that's it's going to be assumed that that's going to be the case, and so you fit right in. So, somebody that is more inclined to jump around to different positions may actually be viewed as a greater asset.
Mm. Oh, flexible.
Yeah.
Interesting. We've got 3-4 minutes left. The time has just flown by so beautifully. I wanted to check in to see if there were some key points that you wanted to make to share with our listeners about your work or the future or getting more information about, you know, your book, any of that.
One thing I do is every Friday I post a new paper on futuristspeaker.com. So go on to that site every Friday, or you can subscribe to our newsletter. There's a way to subscribe to it, and we send out a future trends report every Friday. But just go to futuristspeaker.com, and you can see all of the stuff that I'm working on. The paper that I wrote this last Friday was on anticipatory computing, and it's about the computing processes that can actually anticipate what you need. I mean, as an example, watching television, wouldn't it be great if you could just turn on television and it instantly knew what show you wanted to watch?
Yeah.
Or you pick up a telephone and it knew exactly who you wanted to call.
Yeah, I love it.
And so these things, making decisions for you. And there's an iPad app that just got introduced a couple days ago it's kind of one of the leading pioneers in this whole idea of anticipatory computing. It's called Mind Meld, and it's like the Star Trek term Mind Meld.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, it's a communications tool. It's kind of like Skype, where you can be talking to 2, 3, 4, or 5 of your friends through this communications tool, and as you're talking, it's interpreting what you're saying, and it will bring in images, photos, and videos, and things like that to add to the conversation. So you make a reference to Princess Di, instantly that photo will come up, or some videos will come up, or something, and so. Then based on your conversations, it knows what you're going to want to see in front of you. So that line of thinking, I think, has huge potential.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I love it. To me, it's so important that you've brought this idea that whatever your age, there are some big, huge needs in the computer programming industry, and you have that through the Da Vinci Institute, and the website again was DaVinciCode.com?
DaVinciCoders.
Coders, C-O-D-E-R-S, okay.
Yeah, DaVinciCoders.com, and you can find out much more about it there.
Okay, so to me, Thomas, thank you for taking time to be with us and share some things about what has given me a whole bunch, and I'm hoping my listeners as well, a bunch of optimism and some curiosity to discover more.
Yeah. Usually it kind of stirs up your thinking, and so I hope that you dive in and want to learn more about all this stuff.
Absolutely. And just thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. And we'll stay in contact, and I'm sure if you're available, would love down the road to have you as a guest again.
Okay. All right. Just let me know.
I will. And as a wrap-up, just to say thank you, Thomas. Thank you, beloved listeners. And God bless, and goodbye for now.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.